big news. Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the 1973 podcast. I'm so happy to have one of my all-time favorite players, Brian Propp, joining us this week on the show. And I just want to say, Brian, thank you. Just huge fan. Thanks for coming on. We're going to tell stories. We're going to talk about the career, and it's all about you today. So go far away, as they say.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, I'm thankful that I'm still alive because, almost 10 years ago, I had a massive stroke in Annapolis. And then so I'm just happy to be alive because I couldn't talk or walk at the start. It took me about a year and a half to get better. But thankfully, I've come a long way because, I couldn't talk at all right at the start. And so I've come a long way with that. Done a couple things just to help me. And the only thing that are messed up is my right fingers and the right side. So I can't play golf that well anymore. I still play golf and hockey. And so it's all been a really good thing.
Well, I can't say again how happy we are to have you. And we're going to talk old school. We're going to talk about Flyers. We're going to talk Bruins. We're going to talk Stanley Cup runs. But first, we always start with asking, how did your road as a young person start with the greatest game on the planet? How did the hockey journey start, Brian?
Well, I grew up in Saskatchewan in Canada. In a little town of 300 people, my dad was a Lutheran minister. He preached in English and German every Sunday. And I have two brothers and sisters, are all 13 months apart. So that's why we able to make our own team with less players. Because in Saskatchewan, it's better than Texas, and there's less than a million people in there. And so it's all farming, and there's no hills. It's just windy and wheat and cattle and pigs and you name it. And then the same is Manitoba is kind of the same. And then after that, it goes into Alberta where the Rockers start.
So first team growing up, should we start with the Brandon Wheat Kings or do you want to go back a little further?
Well, why don't we start because when I was 15, I played for the Melville Millionaires. So I can tell people I was a millionaire once. Because we didn't make that much money after when I played. I was definitely not a millionaire. But that year I broke all the records for scoring. I had good lean mates and a good coach. Jerry James was the coach. He played in NHL and NFL and a Canadian football. So he played the two speeds. Sports, and so that's really rare, but he's a good coach, and I really liked the way he was. And then of course I went to the Brandon Wheat Kings, where we didn't lose that much, and I played with the Brad McCrimmon, Ray Ellison, and a couple guys like that for 3 years, and then we all moved on to the NHL after that.
So 1979 draft, right? You get drafted by the Flyers. What was your first thought when you got drafted by the Flyers?
Well, I was working on the farm, so I got a call to see I got drafted by the Philadelphia Flyers. So it's so different at that time. Like, I didn't know when I would get there, but that year it was the World Hockey Association was ending that year, and so that year it changed to an 18-year-old draft. So that's why Ray Bourque and Laurie Boschman were drafted in before us. And but it was a deep draft because all the World Hockey Associations were thrown into that mix too. So it's one of the best drafts ever. And so I know a lot of people are in Hall of Fames, and so I'm hoping to get there one of these years. And it was just really, really good. And thankfully for me, I was really quiet and didn't know what, I was very naive. And so thankfully for me, I got picked a little later, and that way I got to play with the Bob Clark and the Flyers, and then make the playoffs almost every year.
That that first year, your rookie year, they had a nice run in the playoffs that year.
Yeah, we also, that year was the year we had a 35 undefeated streak. So I remember my first game I played with Bob Clark and Reggie Leach, and the first 20 games, and then I scored a goal and had an assist my first game against Bill Smith and the Islanders, and then we lost 9-2, and I was like, whoa, is this what the NHL is going to be like? Because I didn't lose that much in at Brandon. We only lost 5 games my last year, and so that and then we went 35 without a loss, which is a record that probably won't be broken anymore.
That first year in the NHL, did you have a welcome to the league moment? We usually ask that question. A lot of people have some decent stories. Did you have a run-in with somebody or a moment
No,
that?
I got Rick to, I was a rookie, and so I got shaved, and right before, because we always did a trip in Canada, and so I got shaved my head and other things, and so for my family to see me, and so like it was just kind of a little embarrassing, but I didn't matter. It didn't matter. Like, the hair can grow back.
The young blood moment that they talk about in the movie. It was a different time to be a rookie in sports back then.
Well, yeah, but and then so like they cut my ties every once in a while, and then they played a bunch of jokes, and then you had to carry on equipment, and I didn't mind, because like I was really quiet and naive, and I didn't know what was going on, so I just kind of just stayed quiet and just did the scoring for me.
Yeah, the that run that year in the playoffs, any memories of that first run for the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, because that was the year it was number one against number 16, and then they changed the conferences after that. So like that's why we played against the Islanders. We were number one against number 16, so that's why we played against the Islanders in the finals that year. And I just remember like they scored a lot of power play goals, the Islanders, and I know in the game four, I think Jim Watson took a penalty, and they never called a penalty before, but they scored on a power play and overtime, and then we won a game after that, and then we game went into game six, and there was a high stick the first goal that was that they didn't care, and then the offside was by 2 feet, and everybody knew it. And so that was so there's two things that could have made a big difference on my career, even if we wanted, because then we still had a chance to go back to Philadelphia, and at that time, game sevens you usually win, but it was a good start for me, and I just enjoyed it, and did whatever I could.
Well, the offside is what always sticks in my mind as a young kid was that I believe it was Bobby Nystrom was offsides and
Oh no! That was the overtime goal, or the overtime goal. But that one, they thought it was going to offside. But no, the other one was Sutter. But it was 2 feet off, and it's so clear that the refs, like Leon, got in trouble for that.
So, you mentioned Bobby Clark. So before we get any further along the Flyers lineage, I got to ask you thoughts on sharing a locker room with Bobby Clark or favorite Bobby Clark moment.
Yeah, well, he was such a great leader, and so like, I just worked hard, because I played in the Western Hockey League. He played in Flin Flon, and we had good teams, and so like, I wasn't in awe of him, because I knew that I could be a good player, and so like, I just worked hard, and he taught me, he talked a lot on the ice when I was playing with him, where to go and where to go, and how to show it up, and but he was really good on the face-offs, and he stole the puck all the time from the defenseman, and that's why like Reggie and Bill Barber scored a lot of goals, because he got them the puck, and then they could finish.
Another Hall of Famer recently from that time was Mark Howe. Thoughts on playing with Mark?
Oh, he's one of the best ever. His dad was awesome, and because I remember Gordy was 51 when he finished, and I played against him in Hartford, And so I was scared because I didn't want to get his stick in there. But and then Mark got traded to the Flyers a couple of years later, and so we got a lot of good stories from there. But I still remember in 1980, we had the 35 undefeated streak. There were seven guys of us that got in the All-Star game, and that year was in Detroit, their new rink. And so I'll never forget the ovation that they gave from Detroit when Gordy played in that final game.
Now you gotta tell us about the origin for people that don't know of the guffaw celebration.
Yeah, okay. So guffaw, it means a hearty laughter, a hearty laughter in the English dictionary, and it's on. And a lot of people kind of know what it is, but. But I got it from Howie Mandel. Howie is a Canadian, and he did his shows in Atlantic City. And so I was in 80. I was at the shore most of the time, so I got to see him every once in a while. And then, so I decided to, I really, after a couple of years, I just wanted to do something that was more exciting. And so I decided to do a guffaw, go to center ice, and do that. And then Mike Keenan, he said, "Don't ever do that again." But I didn't listen to him, and it took off from there. And that year in the playoffs, Howie called me in the playoffs, and I thought the guys were joking, but he was real. And so he heard about the guffaw, but he didn't mind that I branded the guffaw. And now I have my guffaw cigar brand too. So like but I've been talking with him. Like last year, I was at a shore with him at Atlantic City, and so I got a chance to talk with him. But in the 90s, we had a bunch of guys go to his shows, and I gave him a jersey, and so just I stay in contact with him.
Cool. Tom, before I hijack this show with Flyers questions, do you have a question for Brian?
What do you think the biggest adjustment for you was going from junior hockey right to the pros?
Well, it was much faster. The guys were bigger and stronger, and so like you just had to be a bit careful of that. But I was such a talented player that I didn't mind the rough stuff. And of course, having the Flyers with all their tough guys, that made it a little easier for me to not get beat up on people. But it was yeah. So like it was more about learning how to work out a little better, because my first year, like I didn't work out at all. I just skated and used my talent. But then Pat Croce became the fitness guy for the Flyers, and he made a big difference for all of us of working up a better and eating right and having hydration. And so he probably made my career ask for the next 5 years longer.
Ed, question for Brian.
Brian, what was your favorite building to play in when you first started in the league? And then what was your favorite building to play in towards the end of your career?
Yeah, so like I always liked Montreal, the old rink, because they had all the banners there, and it was and the ice was really good, and they didn't skate too much on the ice. And but it was, for me, it was special just because of Canadian and the history that they had. So it was really special for me, and I always liked playing against Montreal because they were so good at that time too, and it was just tough to win in their place. And then of course my second favorite place was Madison Square Garden, and then well, the one that the rink that I hated was Buffalo, the old Odd, because it was smaller and there's nothing going on, and so it just I liked Montreal and the Rangers.
Yeah, you're not the first one, Brian, to say that they hated the old Odd. So I want to ask you. So we're around the 1984-85 team. I got to ask you about a couple of people. You brought him up, so I'm gonna thoughts on Mike Keenan when he first got there and
Well, at
his
that
mind.
time, like he was a young coach, and so he took over, but he did a good job. But we had such a good teams in the 85 and 84 and 84. And at that time, Dave Poulin was a catching, and then Bob Clark was finishing his career, and then he went to the GM. But we had Tim Kerr, myself, and then we had Mark Howe, Brad McCrimmon. They were two good defensemen, and then we had quality guys. And in '85, like there was four rookies: Tockett, Mellenby, Smith, and Zezel. They came with a team, and so we taught them the right way, how to work out and how to act. And so a lot of those guys are still, have been doing a lot of coaching and helping with team. And of course, Peter died a few years ago with his blood disorder, and then Brad McCrimmon on the plane crash. So I'm seeing a few of these guys that that I know that aren't with us anymore, like Glenn Cochran and Ed Van In. And so, but it was, we had such good leadership, like especially Mark Howe and Dave Poulin and myself. We were good leaders. I was the quiet leader. Like these guys did more talking, but I led by example. And then it was, but it was, Keenan didn't really have to do much because we were almost ahead every time, every year. And then of course, Pelly, he was one of the best goalies in coming up. And so, who knows, like if he didn't pass away, we could have maybe had a couple of Stanley Cups.
I got to ask you about that because as a kid, I was probably 11 years old when the whole Pelly Lindbergh thing happened. And it was just, I remember getting the Hockey Digest in the mail and there was a big article in there. And it was, as a Flyers fan, I thought that was like the piece of the puzzle that was missing. And thoughts on just Pelly as a person or stuff that people wouldn't really know about him.
Yeah, he was really quiet, but he was competitive. And I had a special thing with him because I tried to score in practice all the time. So I'd shoot until he'd get the rebounds and until they had me to go away. But and then he liked that. He was competitive, but I scored him a few times. But he was quiet, good leader. And the thing was that he didn't drink much. It's a shame that they had with 5 days off, and so a lot of those guys went out like it was an afternoon game, and they stayed up and late until the night. At that time, I wasn't drinking, so I had a place at the shore I was going to fix up, and so when I heard the news, the next night, next morning, I went right to the hospital, and it was really devastating. But we had good leaders, and of course Keenan, like the week that we were off. We had a sports psychologist that we talked with all the time, and we were together the whole week. We practiced, and we'd have dinners together. We'd just kind of just and then because we didn't know what to do, and then of course you have to keep going on because you can't just give up. You just have to keep going forward and be positive with everything that's going on. So like you even though you miss him, you had other guys like the other goalies, Froese and Darren Jensen. They kind of filled in and did a really good job too. But and Bob Fraze played really well too after that. But it was just really, really sad. And it hurt a lot of other people, like the younger guys, that because they haven't been dealt with death before.
I got to ask you about somebody else that gets forgotten a lot, but you had mentioned him, but we haven't talked too much about him with a lot of people on the podcast. Another one of my favorites from that era, Tim Kerr. Dominant, dominant, dominant. He was a dominant power forward before it was actually a thing.
Yeah, well, the one thing was that he shot the puck so well, one-timed it, and he got it away fast, and he moved around. Like he was 6'4". You couldn't meet him, but he was such a great player, and he got injured, shoulders and knees, and so otherwise he probably could have been played a few more years. It's like most of us in the 80s, we got hurt a little bit more. Now these guys can play for 20, 25 years and not get hurt. And so that's why their stats, well, they get over 1,000 points and games now. So it's so different, but it's not necessarily better. But, I liked it when we had the 80s. We had we partied with people. We go to the pubs and drink beer with them. And we didn't have phones and videos and things like that. We just hang out with the people and talked with them and had a good time. And that's the way it was. And now they make a lot of money and they have to be careful about everything they say and getting videoed all the time. So it's a little different. But I know that here in Boston, like Lyndon Byers, like he just passed away. He was my arena. Like I lived with him that year in the playoffs, and so I've known him for a while. And his cousin is actually the guy that's helped me with the Gafa cigars in the Dominican Republic. And so just really so sad to hear again. He was a great guy, and but it just your life goes on, and like I should have been dead, but 10 years ago. But thankfully, my family was there, and I pulled away. And so, like, that's my new book is coming up last November. So the book's been going along pretty good. The Angel on My Wing, and so just keep selling it, and there it tells a good story.
We're going to talk about that, and we're going to promote it too when we post the episode. So everybody wants to pick up the book, they can go on Amazon and get it, Brian.
Yeah, in Canada it's Indigo, I think it is. The Canadians it's Indigo, and or Amazon, or the publishers in Chicago, and so like yeah. But Amazon's pretty easy. They get it pretty fast, and then they have it. But what I usually do is like I have a lot of books with me, and then that way, if they want a signed copy, then I have it for them.
So what the guys have been doing is collecting the books of the guys that we've had on, and they've been asking for signed copies for the show so that they can display on the show and the office. And so we'll talk about that and get a couple copies for these guys.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Tom, question for Brian.
Yeah, who do you think was the toughest opponent for you to play against?
Well, the one guy that I hated to play against was Bob Gainey from Montreal. He's 6'3", strong, fast, and I had trouble scoring because he's such a good defensive player. And in Montreal, like, they had six all-time defensemen and good goalies, and so it was tough to score against them. But you figure out a way, and you just hopefully, I've scored a lot of goals against different teams, and I always like to be a consistent scorer. And so, like, I didn't really like. I know that Tim Kerr had good luck with Mike Lewitt from St. Louis. Like, he could score him all the time. I don't know what it was, but I was pretty consistent. Like, I think I scored most of the goalies. So, like, that's all been good. And even the Russian guy, Tretiak, is world championship. I got to score against him.
Ed, question for Brian.
Sure, I'm following up on the goalie question. So, Brian, who is the toughest goalie and probably the most consistent goalie that you played against during your career?
Well, in Edmonton, like we only played Montreal, Edmonton like twice a year. So it was tough to check, but playing against Grant Fuhr, like he was unordered because like they scored a lot of goals, but he did a really good job of defecting, defending too. So I always liked the challenge that I had with him. And of course, Brodeur was tough to play against, and Hasek and Roy. But I lo enjoyed the opportunity to score against the better goalies, because I always looked forward to that. And of course, Ron Hextall, when he came in 87, kind of changed the game because the way he shot the puck around. And then so it's tough to forecheck because we'd get them to dump in, and then he'd dump it right back. And so it changed the way goalies play. Now you have goalies that score like a lot now, like because they can shoot the puck better. But yeah, that time it was kind of different.
So, Brian, that's a great segue because I want to talk about my favorite all-time Flyers team, the 1987 team. That team, to me, was robbed of a Stanley Cup. I'll go on record. I'll say that they were robbed. That team was fantastic. From a fan perspective, was right in my wheelhouse. Ron Hextall, out of his mind in that playoffs. Thoughts on that 87 team?
Well, it was really tough because Edmonton was so good, and then, but I remember I probably played my best hockey in the finals against Edmonton that in '87, because we were down by 3-1, and then I remember game 5 where I had 4 assists in Edmonton, and we beat them 4-3. And Hexie still stood on his head, and then of course game 6 where I tied it up with 6 minutes left at 2-2, and then JJ scored to give us a chance to win the Stanley Cup in against Edmonton. But we were so beat up, it was Edmonton was too tough, and we held them right at the end, and so if it's not for Hexie and Mark Howe, it's over sooner than that. But the guys in Philadelphia enjoy the effort that we had, that we never gave up, and that we forced them to game 7, because it was tough in the 80s because you didn't make that much money, and you played with other teams or players with like 6 or 8 years. And look at that Edmonton group, like they were in their prime, they had 5 or 6 Hall of Famers. And when a goalie and so like that. So and of course Gretzky. And so like it just but everyone appreciates the effort that we had, even though we didn't win. I think everyone was proud of us because we if we lost like in five games, that would have been different. But coming from behind and giving them a chance to win game 7, and we were ahead 1-0 too, and I'll never forget Doug Crosman missed the net by a foot, otherwise it would have been 2-0, and who knows that could have been going over.
Yeah, there was all kinds of bootleg merchandise that had been printed that you guys won the Stanley Cup. I was able to get one time years ago a pennant that said Stanley Cup champion 1987 Philadelphia Flyers. I still have that somewhere. So Tom, question for Brian.
Yeah, you were always a consistent playoff performer. Did your mindset change from the regular season to the postseason?
Well, my first year around, we went to the finals my first year, and then we lost against the Rangers the next couple of years in the first round because the goalies had played so well, and I was a good scorer, and so like I really learned after my third year that I had to be a much better player when the playoffs got started. So I worked Steve, he's a sports psychologist, and so like he helps me with to relax and to tape how to put your mind with the brain wave. And so like it taught me like just try to score every game, and so like I learned that, and so that's why in 84 and 80 and later, like I was a good consistent, and I knew that I had to be the best player in the first round because you lose the first round and then you're out, and it's like it as other rounds get further, sometimes it's easier for the other teams because they know what's going on. Yeah, I learned from that, and but that was I was in 5 Stanley Cup finals and consistent all the time. And I think that this last year I was the number one in the history of the game for left wing scores, and then Brant Marchand just broke my record, but he played another 20 more games than me. And then of course Ovechkin, he's 1 point behind me, and but he's he played 19 games, and but he has one game less than me, so I'm proud of the stats that I have, especially because that's where it counts in the playoffs. you know, who cares if you get a 100 points or whatever, you're playing on a losing team. You know, it's kind of special. You have to be careful. But you know, the Flyers, they didn't play for points, so that's why we, when we were ahead, we played the third and fourth lines and played them defensively. So you know, it was tough to get 100 points at that time.
Ed, question for Brian.
Sure. How does this feel? So, what's your most favorite story about the 1987 Canada Cup? And you know, I mean, to be named, be on the roster with guys like Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, Raymond Bourque. I mean, that's definitely saying, you know, you had a heck of a career to be playing with guys like that for, and
Yeah, I think in 87, like that was the year right after we lost in 87 against the Oilers, and it was in the fall, in September. And so like there's a couple of guys that were members or two, like Tocchet would played, and Hextall played, but he didn't play much, and then Doug Crosman, and we had a couple other guys try out. But you know, I was the oldest player on the team that year. I was 26, and so, but I used my experience and my playoff experience and the world championships and to play against the Russians, because I knew how to play with them. And so most of the time I played with Gretzky and Lemieux on the same line, and then Keenan would split it up every once in a while if we needed to. So like it was really special for me. Just I told these guys, hey, just give me I'll get you the puck and I'll play good defense, and then we can go from there. But it was a three game series. Everyone was 6-5, and then I remember the second game where we went into overtime. I was on the ice when we scored to win the game 6-5. The second game, like I was on the ice, I passed it to Gretzky and Lemieux, and but I didn't get the assist. I was doing that, but he for me, I didn't care, because it gave us a chance. And then of course winning the games three was special, because we were down 3-0 in 10 minutes, and then we came back, and like I scored and Tocchet scored, and then we came from behind, and then of course Lemieux with his minute goal, that was pretty special. So I was on the winning side of that.
Also, once again, like my Flyers 87 team, my favorite Canada Cup series out of all of the ones that they did was 87. That was fantastic. The talent pool that was in that tournament that year was out of this world. It's all Hall of Famers. If you start looking at everybody, and like you had mentioned that someday you hope to make it in, you got my vote. You definitely have my vote. As a lifetime fan, Brian, you got my vote for the
Yeah.
Hall of Fame all day. So let me talk about 87. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story. We have a buddy of ours that's a huge Blackhawks fan. I want to hear your perspective on the Chris Chelios incident with Ron Hextall.
Well, that year is in 87, 89. Like I was leading the scoring in the playoffs. And it was in Montreal, and so I know he was a dirty player, and so he hit me from behind and like knocked me out, and he did it on purpose. He wasn't sore on it, sorry about that at all. And so like he kind of actually likes it, and so but he's a different guy. He's not my favorite, and I it doesn't you know I don't say that about anybody, but you know, I don't respect him. And you know, he hasn't done anything to make it better. And so, but you know, and then of course it was game six when Hextall, he two games behind. So he just I just proud of Ron for backing me and supporting me, and trying to get Chelios back, which he did. But then he cost him 12 games. I don't know why they gave him a 12 game suspension for doing that. But you know, for me, it was me about having Ron Hextall be a great leader and doing something about it, because you know, it was like I only missed one game, which is kind of amazing. And you know, that and game six, I think I had a goal and assist too. But it was just it was a dirty hit, and it was, Hextall kind of just wanted to do what he does.
So let's talk about the trade. Let's talk about how it went down. How did you go from our beloved Philadelphia Flyers to everybody else's Boston Bruins?
Well, that year, Dave Poulin got traded in January of that year, and then Ken Linsman went back to Philadelphia. But I hurt my hand, I had a hole in my artery, so I missed 27 games, and so I couldn't shoot. And so at the end, I got better, and I was able to to play a couple games. And then of course, I knew that I was a free agent. And so they were going to trade me. They changed their lineup, because they let all the leaders go, like Dave Poulin and Tim Kerr and other ones. And so it was they wanted the younger guys to take over, but it didn't work because they didn't make the playoffs for 5 years. And then Ed took the team back. But I was happy to go to Boston because that year they were number one against in the league. And so I was able to play with Nalin, Neely, and the center iceman. And so most of it happened, Bork and these guys playing. It was, and of course, in Boston, it was triple overtime, and it was the nights went out. And so, who knows? You have to win that first game, and in Boston, and made a big difference for our club, just to get back from that.
Yeah, and once again, the Edmonton Oilers. Once again, you can't shake those Edmonton Oilers, Brian.
Well, the goalie played unbelievable too.
Yeah,
Ranford
Bill
played
Ranford.
so good. It was just like you have good goalies, and they can make a big difference. And just by having a good goalie. And just makes a big difference. But Edmonton, they had experienced guys, and then they had good checkers, and they had we just couldn't get from behind.
Tom, question for Brian.
Yeah, looking back, what do you think your most underrated skill or your quality as a player was?
Well, probably. Well, I was such a good shotter, but shooter. But yeah, I played at both ends of the wing, rink. Like I power play, penalty killer. I was a good penalty killer, and so like I got a lot of ice time, and just to play consistent. Like I always really like Mark Recchi, because he kind of played the same way, forward and defense. He was a good scorer, and then he's consistent all the time, and so. For me, like I wasn't the fastest guy, but I was stronger. Like I was 188 pounds, but I was tough too. Like I could take a hit and give a hit, and so I don't know. It was just probably not as fast, but a smart player. And so like that then that's all you have to do. Like but for me. All those years playing with good players like Paul Holmgren and Tim Kerr and Poulin and Mark Howe and Bobby Clark and McLeish and Bill Barber, and then the Tocchet and everything like that, and in Minnesota with Modano and Gagne. And so it helps when you play the right good players, but hopefully I made them better because like Modano. We went to the finals in '91. Like he was a couple of years into the league, but I just kind of taught him how to just get the puck up and use his speed, and that made a big difference. So my experience teaching the younger guys made a difference. It's the same thing with Marchand right now. Like they got a couple of good players in his line, like third line, and these guys they learned a lot from him.
Ed, question for Brian.
Sure. What was your most favorite thing that happened, or favorite story that you had that happened to you when you were in Boston? Just a kind of a funny story, anything like that happened to you when you first got there, or something memorable that happened to you when you first got to Boston?
So like in Boston, they had a bunch of character players, and so like we'd have team meals together. And they always did some shoe chucks. So like they put mustard on the coriander about, and then and so I got nailed right at the start. Even though I was older, I should have known better. But they got me the sheet check, which was but you know you get in the new team and you do that, and so they like that. But yeah, I think Dave Poulin had something to do with that too because he was there in January. So.
So the after the Boston run, let's talk about how you ended up in Minnesota.
Well, of course, Harry never offered me anything in Boston. So like and that year Bob Clark got traded that year, and then he brought me to Minnesota. So as a GM, and then Bob Gailey was a coach, and so you know he got me a chance to play for 3 years there, and then I ended up in Hartford and with Paul Holmgren as a coach and then a GM. So like just knowing the right people and staying in the game. You know, because in Hartford it was different because it was nice because Brad McCrimmon was still there too, and he taught Pronger how to do really really well because he was a rookie that year, Pronger, and Brad really took him up under his hand, and so like, he taught a lot of the guys how to be much better, how to act and how to behave, and so yeah, I give Brad McCrimmon a lot because I was always a quiet guy, even in Brandon. Like, and then Brad was the yell, the talkable guy, and he loved hockey, and so we talked a lot of hockey, and then for the Flyers, when we went to Kaminsky's, we like to sit in the meal after Kaminsky's with the people, and Brad McCrimmon and Mark Howe could tell stories all night, and I just sit there and listen to them.
So that run in 91 with the Minnesota North Stars, that team was no slouch. Bobby Smith, John Casey, a young Mike Modano. Thoughts on that
Madonna.
run?
Yeah. So that was so that year was because we were kind of lowest in the league, and then so, but I think with Bob Smith and myself as being a veteran players made a big difference, and of course we were playing against Chicago, which was number one in the league that year, and so they were kind of cocky, and so thankfully. I you know finally scored my first overtime playoff goal, and that first win made a big difference. And then and then we went against St. Louis, which is number two in the league, and then we beat Edmonton, which was Stanley Cup winners. And then of course Mario kind of took over the last couple of games, but you know he was too talented, and look at that team that they had in Pittsburgh too. But you know, it was just I guess wrong timing for me. Like if I could have played with Gretzky or Lemieux and those, I could have won a couple Stanley Cups.
Right, just like the Canada Cup in '87. You showed your worth, Brian. They didn't buy into
Yeah.
it. So let's talk about life after hockey. A lot of charity work, a lot of public speaking. You got a book. How'd you get involved with the transition after hockey was done?
Yeah, so like when I finished in Hartford, I played a year in France, a year in France, and then I built the Medford Ice Rink in New Jersey, and so I did that for 3 years, and then the Flyers asked me if I wanted to be the radio color analyst like halfway through the year because at that time they were just starting with three man. People. And so like Steve Coates kind of took over, and then I asked, and I only had a week to say yes or no. I told, well, I don't know how to be the color analyst, but I was really bad the first year, but yeah, I learned. Like everything, you learn a little better. And then I was the Flyers radio announcer for 9 years, and then Then from there, I went to the judge group in Conshohocken for 5 years. I ran the staffing and all the technology and other things like that with the connections that I have. And then the last 10 years, I've been with Wolf Commercial Real Estate in New Jersey. So I've always do a lot of different things, and then I have my own charity hockey event for Headstrong Cancer in Philadelphia. And then I have that every at Ice Works in Aston every March or April. I use six former alumni, split up the two teams, making some money for the charity. And I have my own golf tournament for the Stroke Center of University of Pennsylvania every day after Mother's Day. It'll be my fourth year doing that next after Mother's Day. So like I set up a couple charities and help the connections that I have, and they're good at supporting. And with my book coming out like last November, it's going along really well. And just happy to be part of all that. And of course, my cigars are excellent cigars, and from the Dominican Republic. And so I've been selling those for 7 years, and they should be more expensive, but I give them a little deal. But and then the Boston alumni guys like that. When we played last year, a lot of those guys bought cigars for me because they really liked them.
Tom, another question for Brian.
Yeah, you said earlier you mentioned you had suffered a stroke in 2015. How did that change your perspective on life in general?
Well, for me, I was always a very positive person because my dad was, like I said, was a Lutheran minister. So, I had AFib after my career, and so but I didn't want to take blood thinners my whole life, so I did an ablation of the heart like a few years before that, and so and every once in a while the medication works out wears out, and so I still skated twice a week in New Jersey. Was in good shape, and I was just in Annapolis visiting with my son Jackson's school for the Navy. And first day I was okay. The second day I really had a bad headache, and then that night in the middle of the night I fell out of bed, lost a tooth, teeth. All those years playing hockey, I never lost a tooth, and I couldn't talk or walk at all. So thankfully I'm there, and they called 911 pretty fast. And I was able to get to the hospital pretty fast. And so it was really scary at the start because not being able to communicate at all, it was difficult. So I didn't know if I'd ever speak again or get better. But I think I was a very positive person. And so I think with athletes that you're used to your routine, and so you rehab, you keep doing as much as you can to get better. And you find out different things how to get better. My wife has a franchise called Prime IV Hydration and Wellness in Marlton, and there's a lot in Florida. And so, I've been taking some NAD drips, which make a big difference for me, just because my hand's not as swollen. And it. The cells that you use for that drip, they cleanse your whole system, and they give you back the cells that you need when you're younger. And so I'm more clarity. I can talk better. I'm thinking much clearly. I have lots of energy. And so all these little things that you do on my in my book, a lot of people should t read about it, and they can learn from it. Because never giving up, and always be positive and happy your whole life.
Ed, question for Brian.
I have two. One is so if one was to purchase your cigars, what would be the best bourbon that would pair with them?
Oh, there's some good bourbon with that. Oh yeah, like Woodford or Woodford, I think it is. But and sometimes people like some wine, but bourbon is a good way to have a nice cigar. My cigars are 56 by 6 inches, so they're like a golf size. And I have a mild, a medium, and a Maduro and limited edition. And so like They last about an hour, and but they burn really well, and the Dominican Republic does a really good job of rolling them. And so it's just if anybody wants, so they just call me, and I can always have them with me. I can ship too.
Is there a website that you can get them at, or?
Yeah, it's GuffawCigars.com.
Okay, wonderful. All right. Well,
We'll be sure to attach all the links to the podcast, Brian, for you.
Absolutely. And I just have a question about so what brought about the thoughts to write the book?
Well, so like I didn't want to do a hockey book, but after my stroke, like Wayne Fish is a writer from Courier Post, and so I've known him from when I first got started, so I talk with them all. And so like we did a recordings for a year, and then another 10 months to edit everything. So it just came up November, but I think I just wanted to do a good story, especially for the stroke and how it can help people with strokes. And then, and of course, like Chris Therrien, like he bought a he wrote a book like 4 years ago, and Wayne Fish helped too. So I was just with Chris Therrien today, and Todd Fedoric. We had the Flyers alumni at the shore, like in an Ocean City, and then there's going to be a Wild Word tomorrow, and then CL the next day for some Flyers alumni. So like we have a great alumni, and so I'm on the board of their alumni, and we do a lot of things for charities and help other guys. And so it's just the book made a difference, just because like I didn't want to write a hockey book per se, but it talks a little bit about my faith and a little bit about hockey and how my stroke and how I recover from my stroke. And so it's a good read too.
So, Brian, I got to ask you, out of all the players that you played with, I want you to pick your ultimate line mates. Out of everybody you've played with, who's your picks?
Well, I liked Tim Kerr, of course, and Mark Howe and Brad McCrimmon, and Pelly, so like Paul Hogan was a good guy because he protected me too, but I have so many good players, but Tim Kerr and I with Dave Poulin, we had a good line, and so we fit in really well. And we checked really well, and we did everything consistent. And so, but having Brad McCrimmon and Mark Howe, Mark Howe was plus 85 1 year, and Brad McCrimmon was like 83. So, my plus minus is, I think my career, it should be like, I think it was like plus 400 for my career, or 398, and I think it's like 13 all time for forwards in the NHL history. So that tells a story right there. Just being a plus player and not sticking like power play and just consistent player.
You got no arguments for me, Brian. I know you should definitely make a run at the Hall of Fame. You got my vote, like I said. Tom, question for Brian before we wrap it up.
Sure. What head coach do you think had the biggest impact on your career?
Well, I really liked Pat Quinn at the start. He was only there for a year and a half, but he taught me to. I liked the way he handled himself, like his plays. He talked with people. He had explained everything. So, like, but and then I really liked Pat, and then of course Keenan. Because like he got the best of the players. I always liked because he played to win every game. So if you were down by a couple goals, he'd play two lines, and if you were ahead, he just played the chuckers. And so, but I really liked the way he handled himself, and because he hated to lose, and so that's the way. Like now, it seems like they rotate all the lines all the time. It's like you just you like. The old days, you'd play three lines and throw in the fourth line, and they have the tough guys, and then they to get a fighting energy, and so like they'll be away for like 5 or 6 or 10 minutes. So yeah, but it's a game. It changed a lot. Like now they're the players are much faster, and the goalies are much bigger, and the defense, they can move, and so it's tough. You got to be a fast player, but it's still smart. Like Ovechkin, like he still can shoot the puck. It's unbelievable. He had 40 goals, and it's like that's so consistent, and that's crazy.
Ed, final question for Brian from you.
Sure, Brian, who is the toughest defenseman that you played against, and why, or what made it so tough?
Well, I'd say Ray Bourque, because he was so good offensively and defensively. So I hated to play against him because we kind of played against each other, and he could shoot the puck so well, and he skate really well, and he could skate forever. So I was glad when he won the Stanley Cup after 22 years. So that was good. And so all the other Boston alumni that I know, like I'm on their board of alumni. I get all the information, things that they have. And so like that, like I said, I've got this pro golf tournament coming up like in a couple of weeks in New Jersey, and I think there might be a bot of a couple of Boston alumni that they can kind of go together or rent a plane, or and then just like 3 or 4 days, and so I'll get a chance to hang out with most of those guys.
And that's open to the public, Brian.
It should be, yeah.
Cool. I have two last questions. So, first question is, looking back at your entire career, what's your proudest hockey moment?
I think for me, it's just be a consistent player, and being a leader, and just and being an honest player, and a good sports person. Growing up from Canada, a little town of 300 people, you learn right to wrong, and give back, and just do all the best thing that you can, and don't complain. I see two people that complain all the time, and they're selfish, and so I'm not like that. I like to have fun. I like to go fishing and golfing, and playing hockey, and enjoy life, and I'm thankful that I am, and it's just happy to be alive.
So I usually end the podcast when we've had people on with this question. What's the one word that sums up your hockey playing career?
I would say consistent.
Very good. Very good. But let's get to the fun stuff before we go, and we're going to let everybody know how they can get a hold of your book, where they can buy a Gafford t-shirt. And the cigars. So let's start with where can they reach out if they want a autographed copy of your book?
So it's my book is Angel on My Wing. If you want to go to Amazon, but I'm in New Jersey most of the summer, and so like at CL City, so like I have some with me. So if they want, like they could just if they want to mail me the copy, or I'm always out doing a lot of golf and charities, and so I have them with me all the time. So and I only charge $30 if they want, and then so that's good. And then my cigars are GafaCigars.com from the Dominican Republic, the distributors in Chicago. And another thing that I've been working with a team, Canada company, which is called Millions.ca. So it has a lot of gear for t-shirts, like my golf tournament, the Gafa t-shirts, hoodies, hats, pucks. And so like if they want to go to millions.co, they can order from there too.
Very good.
And
So
also like
let's.
I have my own brianprop.com website too that my brother on helps with.
Okay. And fans can get a hold of you, no problem to get stuff signed when they mail it to you and all that other fun stuff.
Yeah,
And
that's fine. Yeah, they go to my Brian Prop website.
okay, very
Or
good.
the
So
GafaCigars.com. A lot of people go to that too.
fantastic. So I always say official friend of the show now, Brian.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so we'll just say thanks for coming on. And as a lifetime fan, Flyers fan, and Brian Propp fan, I'm happy to have you on and happy to chirp with the boys and tell stories and keep the alumni relevant with the old school hockey fans.
Yeah, that's it's been so good. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks,
We
Brian.
appreciate
Thank
it.
you, Brian. Thanks for your time,
Thanks,
sir.
guys.
Thanks. Have a
Have
good night.
a good
Kafaw. Thanks.
night. Okay.
All right.
Still taping, Andy?
Nope.
Oh, I didn't hear it go off.
Recording on my thing.